Blog Talk Radio.
I like that, y'all.
I've had my share of heartache, but I'm still here. Trouble, I've seen my share of trouble, but I'm still here. Bruises, I've taken my
Again to our part four series of getting to know who and what you are. I want you to know that you are your own rule makers. You set the guidelines and you decide how well you have done, how well you are doing, for you are the one who has decided who and what you really are. and who you want to be. And you are the only one who can assess how well you're doing. No one else will judge you ever, for how and why could God judge God's own creation and call it bad? If God wanted you to be or do anything perfectly, God would have left you in the state of total perfection whence you came. The whole point of the process was for you to discover yourself, create yourself as you truly are, and as you truly wish to be. Yet, you could not be that unless you also had a choice to be something else. Should God therefore punish you for making a choice that God himself laid before you? If God did not want you to make the second choice, why would God create other than the first? This is a question you must ask yourself before you assign God the role of the condemning God. The direct answer to your question is yes, you may do as you wish without fear of retribution. It may serve you, however, to be aware of consequences. Consequences are results, natural outcomes. These are not at all the same as retribution or punishment. Outcomes are simply that. They are what results from the natural application of natural law. They are that which occur quite predictably as a consequence of what has occurred. All physical life functions in accordance with natural law. Once you remember these laws and apply them, you have mastered life at the physical level. What seems like punishment to you, or what you would call evil or bad luck, is nothing more than a natural law asserting itself. So you say then, if I were to know these laws and obey them, I would never have a moment's trouble again? Is that what I'm saying? What I'm saying is you would never experience yourself as being in what you call trouble. You would not understand any life situation to be a problem. You would not encounter any circumstances with trepidation. You would put an end to all worry, doubt, and fear. You would live as you fantasize Adam and Eve lived. Not as disembodied spirits in the realm of the absolute, but as embodied spirits in the realm of the relative. Yet you would have all the freedom, all the joy, all the peace, and all the wisdom, understanding, and power of the spirit you are. You would be a fully realized being. This is the goal of your soul. This is its purpose. To fully realize itself while in the body, to become the embodiment of all that it really is. This is God's plan for you. This is God's idea that God should become realized through you. That thus concept is turned into experience, that God might know God's self experientially. The laws of the universe are laws that God laid down. They are perfect laws, creating perfect function of the physical. Have you ever seen anything more perfect than a snowflake? Its design, its symmetry, its conformity to itself and originality from all else, all are a mystery. You would wonder at the miracles of the awesome display of nature. Yet, if God can do this with a single snowflake, what think you God can do, have done, with the universe? Were you to see the symmetry of it, the perfection of its designs, from the largest body to the smallest particle, you would not be able to hold the truth of it in your reality. Even now, as you get glimpse of it, you cannot yet imagine or understand its implications. Yet you know there are implications, far more complex and far more extraordinary than your present comprehension can embrace. Shakespeare said it wonderfully. There are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in your psychology. I'm sorry, in your philosophy. Then how can I know these laws? How can I learn them? It is not a question of learning, but of remembering. Well, how can I remember them? Begin by being still. Quiet the outside world so that the inner world might bring you sight. This insight is what you seek, yet you cannot have it while you are so deeply concerned with the outer reality. Seek, therefore, to go within as much as possible. And remember, you are not going within. Come from within as you deal with the outside world. Remember what I've always said. If you do not go within, you go without. Now, put it in the first person as you repeat it to make it more personal. If I do not go within, I go without. You have been going without all your life, yet you do not have to and never did. There is nothing you cannot be. There is nothing you cannot do. There is nothing you cannot have. Then you say, that sounds like pie in the sky promises. What other kind of promise would you have God make? Would you like if God promised you less? For thousands of years, people have disbelieved the promise of God for the most extraordinary reason. They were too good to be true. So you have chosen a lesser promise, a lesser love, for the highest promise of God proceeds from the highest love. Yet you cannot conceive of a perfect love, and so a perfect promise is also inconceivable, as is a perfect person. Therefore, you cannot believe even in yourself. Failing to believe in any of this means failure to believe in God. For belief in God produces belief in God's greatest gift, unconditional love, and God's greatest promise, unlimited potential. Now, I just want to say this again because this is very, very, very important for us to understand. Failing to believe in any of this means failure to believe in God. For belief in God produces belief in God's greatest gift, unconditional love, and God's greatest promise, unlimited potential. But I've heard this talk of unlimited potential before, and it doesn't square with the human experience. Forget the difficulties encountered by the average person. What about the challenges of these born with mental or physical limitations? Is their potential unlimited? You have written so in your own scriptures in many ways and in many places. Look to see what you have written in Genesis chapter 11, verse 6 of your Bible. It says, "And the Lord said, Behold, the people are one. And they have all one language, and this is only the beginning of what they will do. And now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do." Yes, now you can trust that. Well, but that doesn't answer the question of the feeble, the infirm, the handicapped. Do you think they are limited, as you put it, not of their choice? Do you imagine that a human soul encounters life challenges, whatever they may be, by accident? Is this your imagining? So you're saying, do you mean a soul chooses what kind of life it would experience ahead of time? No. That would defeat the purpose of the encounter. The purpose is to create your experience and thus create yourself in the glorious moment of now. You do not therefore choose the life you will experience ahead of time. You may, however, select the person, place, and events, the conditions and circumstances, the challenges and obstacles, the opportunities and options with which to create your experience. You may select the color of your palette, the tools of your chest, for your chest, the machinery for your shop. What you create with these is your business. That is the business of life. Your potential is unlimited in all that you choose to do. Do not assume that a soul which has incarnated in a body which you call limited has not reached its full potential, for you do not know what that soul was trying to do. You do not understand its agenda. You are unclear as to its intents. Therefore, bless every person and condition and give thanks. Thus you affirm the perfection of God's creation and show your faith in it. For nothing happens by accident in God's world. And there is no such thing as coincidence, nor is the world buffered by random choice or something you call fate. If a snowflake is utterly perfect in its design, do you not think the same will be said about something as magnificent as your life? But even Jesus healed the sick. Why would he heal them if their conditions were so perfect? Jesus did not heal those he healed because he saw their conditions as imperfect. He healed those he healed because he saw those souls asking for healing as part of their process. He saw the perfection of the process. He recognized and understood the soul's intention, felt that all sickness, mental or physically, represented imperfection. Would he not have simply healed everyone on the planet all at once? Do you doubt that he could do this? Then those of you would say, yeah, I believe he could have. Then the mind begs to know, why did he not do it? Why would the Christ choose to have some suffer and others be healed, for that matter? Why does God allow any suffering at any time? This question has been asked before, and the answer remains the same. There is perfection in the process, and all life arises out of choice. It is not appropriate to interfere with choice, nor to question it. It is particularly inappropriate to condemn it. What is appropriate is to observe it, and then to do whatever might be done to assist the soul in seeking and making a higher choice. Be watchful, therefore, of the choices of others, but not judgmental. Know that their choices is perfect for them in this moment now. Yet, stand ready to assist them should the moment come when they seek a new choice, a different choice, a higher choice. Move into communion with the souls of others, and their purpose, intention, will be clear to you. This is what Jesus did with those he healed, and with all those whose lives he touched. Jesus healed all those who came to him or who sent others to him supplicating for them. He did not perform a random healing. To have done so would have been to violate a sacred law of the universe. Allow each soul to walk its path. Then you say, but does that mean we must not help anyone without being asked? Surely not, or we would not be able to help the starving children. You see, the question answers itself. If a thing is obviously right, do it. But remember to exercise extreme judgment regarding what you call right and wrong. A thing is only right or wrong because you say it is. A thing is not right or wrong instinctively. Rightness or wrongness is not an instinctive condition. It is a subjective judgment and a personal value system. By your selective judgment, do you create yourself? By your personal values, do you demonstrate and determine who you are? The world exists exactly as it is so that you may have these judgments. If the world exists in perfect condition, your life process of self-creation would be terminated. It would end. A lawyer's career would end tomorrow where there are no more litigations. A doctor's career would end tomorrow where there are no more illnesses. A philosopher's career would end tomorrow where there are no more questions. We all of us, would be through creating where there's nothing more to create. We all of us have an invested interest in keeping the game going. Much as we say we would like to solve all the problems, we dare not solve all the problems, or there would be nothing left for us to do. If I say to you, you are God, where does that leave religion? If I say to you, you are healed, where does that leave science and medicine? If God said to you, you shall live in peace, where does that leave the peacemakers? If God said to you, the world is fixed, where does that leave the world? And now, of plumbers, the world is filled with essentially two kinds of people, those who give you things you want and those who fix things. And since even those who simply give you things you want, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, are also fixers. For to have a desire for something is often to have a need for it. This is why addicts are said to need a fix. Be careful, therefore, that desire not becomes addiction. But am I saying the world would also have problems? Or am I saying that you actually want it that way? I'm saying that the world exists the way it exists, just as a snowflake exists the way it exists, quite by design. You have created it that way, just as you have created your life exactly as it is. I want what you want. The day you really want an end to hunger, there will be no more hunger. God has given you all the resources with which to do that. You have all the tools with which to make that choice. You have not made it, not because you cannot make it. The world could end world hunger tomorrow. You choose not to. Now, I'm showing you in stark terms that the world exists the way it exists because you have chosen for it. You are systematically destroying your own environments, then pointing to so-called natural disasters as evidence of God's cruel hoax or nature's harsh ways. You have played the hoax on yourself, and it is your ways which are cruel. Nothing is more gentle than nature. And nothing more cruel to nature than man. Yet you step aside from all involvement in this, deny all responsibility. It is not your fault, you say. It is this, you are right. It is not a question of fault. It is a matter of choice. You can choose the end of destruction of the rainforest tomorrow. You can choose to stop depleting the protective layers hovering over our planet. You can choose to discontinue the ongoing slaughter of your Earth's ingenuous ecosystem. You can seek to put the snowflake back together, or at least to halt its explore melting. But will you do it? You can similarly end all wars tomorrow simply, easily. All it takes, all it has ever taken, is for all of us to agree. Yet, if you cannot all agree on something as basically simple as ending the killing of each other, how can you call upon the heavens and shaking fists to put your life in order? God will not do for you what you will not do for yourself. This is the law and the prophet. The world is in the condition it is in because of you and the choices you have made or failed to make. The earth is the shape it's in because of you and the choices you have made or failed to make. Your own life is the way it is because of you and the choices you have made or failed to make. But you'll say, but I did not choose to get hit by that truck. I did not choose to get mugged by that robber or raped. People would say that. There are people in this world who would say that. Yeah, you are not a root cause for the condition would exist in the robber's desire or the perceived need to steal. You have all created consciousness which makes rape possible. It is when you see in yourself that which causes the crime that you begin at last to heal the condition from which it sprang. Feed your hungry. Give dignity to your poor. Grant opportunity to your less fortunate. Endure in the prejudice which keeps masses huddled and angry with little promise of a better tomorrow. Put away your pointless taboos and restrictions upon sexual energy. Rather, help others to truly understand its wonder and to channel it properly. Do these things, and you will go a long way towards ending robbery and rape forever. And as for so-called accidents, the truck coming around the bend, the brick falling from the sky, learns to greet each incident as a small part of a larger mosaic. You have come here to work out an individualized plan for your own salvation. Yet, salvation does not mean saving yourself from the snarls of the devil. There is no such thing as the devil. And hell does not exist. You are saving yourself from the oblivion of non-realization. You cannot lose in this battle. You cannot fail. Thus, it is not a battle at all, but simply a process. Yet, if you do not know this, you will see it as a constant struggle. You may even believe in the struggle long enough to create a whole religion around it. This religion will teach that struggle is the point of it all. This is a false teaching. It is in not struggling that the process proceeds. It is in surrendering that the victory is won. Accidents happen because they do. Certain elements of life process has come together in a particular way, at a particular time, and with particular results. Results which you choose to call unfortunate for your own particular reasons, yet they may not be unfortunate at all, given the agenda of your soul. I tell you this, there is no coincidence, and nothing happens by accident. Each event and adventure is called to yourself by yourself in order that you might create and experience who you really are. All true masters know this. This is why mystic masters remain unperturbed in the face of the worst experiences of life, as you would define them. The great teachers of your Christian religion understood this. They know that Jesus was not perturbed by the crucifixion, but expected it. He could have walked away, but he did not. He could have stopped the process at any point. He had that power, yet he did not. He allowed himself to be crucified in order that he might stand as man's eternal salvation. Look, he said, at what I can do, look at what is true. And know these, and know that these things and more shall you also do. For have I not said ye are good gods? Yet you do not believe. If you cannot believe, then believe in yourself. Believe in me. So Jesus was trying to tell you just who you were and to let you know what it is that you can do. But we would not listen because the promise was too good. We've been told so much other things that we don't even believe the one who we say died for us. So it's important for us to hear what the Word of God says. I thank you all for tuning in.